Hi, I'm Marsha Lee, Information Education Specialist here at the Central Platte NRD. I'm here today with Lyndon Vogt, General Manager, and Jess Minkin, our Assistant Manager.
Thanks, Marsha. Appreciate the introductions.
Lyndon, many of us have memories of the March 2019 floods. Let me ask you this. What were you doing when you realized what was beginning to unfold with the current weather and river conditions?
Yeah, you know, the day before we saw the flooding, the Central Platte NRD had had a public information meeting in Amherst, which is about 50 to 60 miles west of Grand Island, where we saw the worst of the flooding anyway. As we were coming home from Amherst that afternoon, we could see a tremendous amount of water coming out of the hills or out of the drains and flowing into the Wood River. We were concerned about the Wood River flows as we got further to the east coming into Grand Island. We had called a couple of our staff to go look at the Wood River that day because we do have a flood control structure that protects the south half of Grand Island. So the current weather conditions were, we had about 25 inches of frost in the ground. It was raining as we were going out to Amherst that day, and it was also raining when we were coming home. So we were seeing a tremendous amount of runoff because of that frost in the ground and the amount of moisture that was coming down.
Can you tell us a little bit about what was happening in the Central Platte NRD office?
I think when this first started, I don't think any of us were aware of how severe it really was or was going to be. Once we realized the flows that were coming down the Wood River, we sent a couple of our field staff out to do an inspection of our levees south of Grand Island on the Wood River to make sure that the gate was properly open, that we weren't seeing flooding in town. There is a portion of that that has to be sandbagged. So we were concerned that if it was getting too high, that there was going to be some additional work that needed to be done to protect the community. So once we knew the flooding was going to be an issue on our projects, we have emergency preparedness plans and emergency action plans and O&M manuals for all of our flood risk reduction projects. We got them manuals out, kind of freshened ourselves up on the proper procedures and dealing with flooding and dealing with the projects themselves. We had a meeting with our entire staff, kind of paired up our field staff, and we had two employees in all of our vehicles, made sure we had the proper safety equipment in all of our vehicles, and came up with a check-in procedure to make sure that they were calling back to the office every 35 or 40 minutes so we knew where they were at and what was going on. We were very concerned about the safety of our own employees at that point. They were driving some of our levees. One side of that levee may not have had much water in it, but the other side was full of water and it was muddy, and of course we'd had a lot of rain. So safety was our number one concern at that point.
So what I remember of that day, we were concerned about flooding that's going on, but with Grand Island, we've got two major projects. We've got our Wood River flood control project, protects the south side of town. Our PSM project, as we call it, is the one that does our northwest part of town. We really weren't too concerned with our Prairie Silver Morse project. We had had staff go out the night before on the 12th and look at the detention cells. We've got a 500-acre detention cell there, and there really wasn't much water in it. There wasn't a lot of water coming in it. We really weren't concerned about that, but we were concerned with the water that would be coming down the Wood River. We knew where we had seen it in Amherst the day before that, over the next couple days, that would be hitting our Wood River diversion. Lyndon and myself had sent staff out checking the Wood River diversion. We went and checked that one, and there was water in it, as we were expecting, and it really wasn't too bad. And it wasn't until we got over to the northwest part of Grand Island that we realized that we were in for a lot more than we had bargained for, I guess. All of a sudden, we're seeing water that's a foot away from coming over the highway at 9 o'clock in the morning, when the day before there was absolutely no water anywhere.
And that was not a part of the Wood River project. This
right.
was on our Prairie Silver Morse flood
that's
control
our
project.
Prairie Silver Morse project, which we weren't concerned about, but then all of a sudden, we're concerned about it.
So how did our NRD projects handle this event?
You know, we have a number of flood resilience projects within the Central Platte NRD, but the main two we're really talking about today is the Wood River and our Prairie Silver Morse projects. Our Wood River project actually protected the city of Grand Island as it was designed to do. The project was pretty much at capacity for 4 or 5 days. And so during that time frame, we were spending about 24 hours a day either checking on the Wood River or the Prairie Silver Morse project. We were concerned about flooding along Highway 2 and Airport Road in Northwest Grand Island. But just the amount of days and the amount of water that were in them structures was kind of beyond anything we had seen before. So we did have some concern about the resilience of them projects and how long they could hold up with that kind of water in them. So we did drive the tops of the levees on a regular basis, day and night, for about a week to make sure we weren't seeing sand boils or erosion issues.
Getting up, me calling you at 2 o'clock in the morning because I got called into weather service to get a forecast for the Wood River diversion. And so I call Lennon and wake him up, and meets me down here, and we go and check the diversion, and it had actually dropped an inch from where it had been 6 hours earlier.
So we went back to bed for an hour.
Went back to bed for an hour, slept here on the couch at the NRD, waiting for sunrise.
Got some beautiful pictures at sunrise about 5:30 that morning. We did have quite a bit of flooding above that project in some of the smaller communities west of Grand Island. But as far as the project itself, it performed as it was designed to perform. Our Prairie Silver Marsh project, which actually was not even quite complete, we had just finished up about a mile and a half of levee on that project that was right on the northwest corner of Grand Island. We did have some erosion on that project. And that project, we do have an emergency spillway at our detention cell west of town. And it actually ran over that emergency spillway for probably 3 days, maybe even 4 days. But that's what it was supposed to do. It performed as it was supposed to. We were happy with our flood control projects under the situation where it kind of surprised us, you know what I mean? This flood event, it certainly wasn't predicted and the weather wasn't predicted that caused this to happen. But as far as the projects themselves, they worked like they were supposed to.
Yeah, our projects worked exactly as they were supposed to. But the other thing that worked even better than we had planned beyond what we were expecting was the collaboration that we had within the EOC with FEMA, NEMA, the NRDs, the county, city of Grand Island, city of Wood River, the village of Alda. Everybody just kind of coming together, and the amount of help that people were just willing to give.
Not only the effort of all them entities, but the efforts of all the volunteers in the area that came into the fire departments and them smaller communities that helped lay sandbags and help try to protect their own communities. I think the resilience that we probably hadn't seen for a long time in these communities that's there when needed, that really came out. You know, we saw the different communities, the different fire departments, the volunteers that were kind of sharing resources. We saw people sharing sandbags and sharing labor. And we saw sandbags being hauled from Grand Island to Wood River, to Alda, and vice versa. Wherever they were needed, we saw volunteers to assist, and not only with the labor, but with the supplies that was needed to make it all work.
Right, and then all of a sudden one day here's this Cajun army that shows up out of nowhere with supplies for all of Nebraska, just using Grand Island as a hub to distribute hay, any kind of resources that farmers and producers would need. Well, we've got another 40 plus flood control structures across our district. That includes a number of dams and a few more diversion channels. They all seen water. Everything from Dawson County clear to Polk County was being flooded across our district. The western part of our district, we don't have a huge presence of staff out there, but the staff we do have is very involved with making sure that the dams we have were not being overtop, working with the local canals, making sure that they had the resources they needed, irrigation districts having the resources they needed, you know, and we have a number of smaller communities that are located along streams and rivers within our district. They got hit really hard. Part of what these flood resilience projects do is show the benefit that comes from years and years of preparation and work. We still have a long ways to go. I think most NRDs still have a long ways to go.
There was a tremendous amount of flooding in the Columbus area, but most of that flooding was coming from the Loup River as a result of flooding where the Loup and the Platte come together, that was just outside or on the very, very east edge of our district. What we really saw come out of this is the coming together of not only the community, but of the state as a whole. That was kind of a neat thing to see because of one event.
We keep hearing warnings that there may be more flooding this spring. Can you talk a little bit more about this?
You know, the situation we're in right now is somewhat similar to what we were last year and somewhat not. And I know that really don't make sense, but you know, last year we had about 25 inches of frost in the ground at this time. We'd had a very cold winter with not much snow. This year, we don't have the frost in the ground. We have very little frost in the ground, but we're fully saturated. So last year we were sitting in a situation where everything ran off because of the frost. This year we're sitting in a situation where if we get moisture or rain event, it's going to run off as well because we're fully saturated. So we are kind of set up in a similar situation as far as runoff and flooding potential goes. But honestly, it seemed like last spring, once we started getting the rains, they just kind of kept coming. And of course, none of us know what this spring holds. Only Mother Nature's going to tell us that, I guess. But I do think we're probably in a very similar situation as we were last year, but it doesn't seem like we're in quite as wet of a pattern right now. We are in a situation where some of our flood control structures, especially our detention cell, has some water in it. When the flooding started last year, that detention cell, there's a 550-acre detention cell west of Grand Island was empty when this project's flooding started. This year, we still have a couple feet of water in that detention cell, and it's designed to hold about 6 feet. So it's a third full of water right now. So that could be an issue. If we get a substantial rain event or a runoff event, we don't have as much room for storage right now as we did last year.
But even though that levee project is there, there was still flooding that happened. You know, we keep hearing that we're not supposed to call these flood protection projects anymore. They're supposed to be flood resilience projects. They do a great job of making sure that we're buying time to give people enough warning of what is happening, because they truly aren't protection projects. There's no way that we can guarantee protection. We feel it's buying time.
What our projects do is make sure that people have plenty of warning to protect themselves or even their property, possibly. But projects aren't designed to alleviate all flooding. Our projects are designed to handle possibly a 100-year flood event. But we know, as we just saw last year, that in situations where the flooding is beyond what our projects can handle, it gives us plenty of time to warn people the water's coming and they need to protect themselves and protect their property the best they can.
Lyndon and Jess, thank you for visiting with me today. If you'd like to learn more or see pictures from last year, visit our website at cpnrd.org.
And now, keep listening as our partner NRDs share how everything unfolded in their districts.
Hi, this is Julie Rogge, Information and Education Specialist at the Lower Elkhorn NRD. I'm here today with our General Manager, Mike Soshek, and our Projects Manager, Kurt Becker. I think we all have memories of the March 2019 floods. I remember being in my hometown of Osmond that morning. We were at the Bazil Groundwater Management Area meeting, and that's when I realized things were getting serious very quickly. Alerts started buzzing on my phone, and the schools were letting the children out early. And I remember going to the glass door of the auditorium and looking out, and I could see that the main street of Osmond was just full of water. That's just a memory in my mind that'll be there for a long time. I think that's when our thoughts started to race, and we were thinking, okay, how are we going to get back to Norfolk? How are we going to get home to our kids? Everything just kind of got serious at that point, and the bomb cyclone had arrived. Mike, let's start with you. Do you have some stories from that day or how you got back from Osmond to Norfolk?
Yeah, we left the auditorium that day when we canceled the meeting early because of the water running down the streets. But I was with our chairman, Dennis Schultz, and as we left town, we could only find one road open, and that was headed west out of Osmond. So we took that road, hoping to get to the next highway that would take us south. And as we drove through Plainview, the streets were flooded there, too, on Main Street. I remember the water almost being up to the doors of the Tahoe. We still had to continue west. We made it to Neely, and we started our trip back to Norfolk on 275. 275, to my surprise, was also being overcome by water. Just somewhere east of Tilden, we had to cross the bridges there, and the water was over the bridges. There was already logs floating across the highway. The Tahoe almost got swept off. I was following a big truck that was pulling some skid loaders, and if it wasn't for him breaking the water and leaving us a path to go in, I'm afraid we would have been stuck in Tilden. It was an eye-opening experience. It happened really fast, but ultimately our half-hour drive to Norfolk on a usual day took us about 3 hours, and dealing with water everywhere.
Kurt, can you tell us a little bit about what was happening that day and into the next few days with the bomb cyclone that had hit on March 13th?
I was actually headed home for the day, and I got a call from the chief of dam safety for the state of Nebraska, raising some concerns with the water elevation in Willow Creek Lake could potentially get to, and that it had likely never gotten there before. And he had some concerns that we needed to monitor that. So I headed back to the office afternoon, early evening. Myself, Julie, and one other individual from the office tried to get up to the lake and to Pierce. And we tried several different routes, all to stop with water flowing heavily over the road. So we turned around and came back to Norfolk. I did eventually make it home that evening. From there, I kept in close contact with the chief of dam safety, monitoring the lake levels at Willow Creek fairly regularly throughout the night, that night and several days later. We were also monitoring two other reservoirs or dams that the district owns, Maple Creek near Lee and Mascantine near Stanton, both of which they had smaller amounts of rainfall. The snowpack probably wasn't as heavy in those watersheds also. So those two reservoirs only rose minimal compared to Willow Creek, which rose approximately 10 feet in the lake and was cause for concern and required us to monitor it fairly heavily for the next several days and even into the next week.
And for our listeners, the Willow Creek Dam is just southwest of Pierce, Nebraska. So all in all, how did all of our projects hold up and even the flood control levees?
Well, the NRD projects, for the most part, did their job. We did lose some trails along the Willow Creek. Sand deposited on top of the trails on the Cowboy Trail near Norfolk. But overall, the three dams held up. They did the job that they were supposed to. We did have the highest flood pool in Willow Creek, 11, 12 inches from going over the auxiliary spillway. So that was the highest, I believe, a record of almost five or six feet. Unprecedented, to say the least. The levees around the district, for the most part, held up. There are some issues. A levee by Wakefield was damaged. Obviously, the levee protecting the town of Winslow did not survive. It was only a 50-year storm type of levee, so that was kind of expected. But for the most part, we fared pretty well. We're going to continue to monitor those structures and make sure they're ready for the next storm.
It's important to note that on average, the Willow Creek Dam holds back 7,000 acre-feet of water. On Friday, March 15th, during the historic flood event, the dam was holding back over 18,000 acre-feet of water. An acre-foot is a unit of volume commonly used to reference large-scale water resources, such as reservoirs. It's defined as the volume of water necessary to cover 1 acre of surface area to the depth of 1 foot. 1 acre foot is equal to over 325,000 gallons of water. If you take that number times the 18,000 acre-feet of water that the dam held back during the storm, you get 5.86 billion gallons of water. The dam held back water that would have otherwise affected the communities of Pierce, Hayter, Norfolk, as well as the downstream landowners, the county roads, and the bridges. And it helped to protect the flood control levee at Norfolk as well. Without the investments that previous community leaders put into place years ago, this historic event could have been much worse. Thanks for being with me here today. Do we have any thoughts on what this spring is going to produce for us as weather-wise?
Well, we've already seen some lowland flooding along the Elkhorn due to ice jams. But depending on Mother Nature, they're expecting a wet spring, and the ground is already saturated. So there is potential for some flooding, but hopefully nothing near the capacity of last year.
Fortunately, the snowpack is much less at this point, but that can always change from now until we get into true spring weather.
For more information on this and many other programs, you could visit the Lower Elkhorn NRD's website at lenrd.org.
Hi, I'm Lacey Sabodka, the Information and Education Coordinator for the Lower Platte North NRD. I'm here today with Eric Gottschalk, General Manager, Tom Mountford, Assistant Manager, and Bob Hyman, Operations and Maintenance Manager.
Thank you for having us
today.
Thank
you. I'm very pleased to be here.
Today we will be discussing the events that happened almost a year ago in March. Many of us have memories of the late winter storm that hit Nebraska and created historic flooding. What were you doing when you realized what was beginning to unfold with the current weather and river conditions?
Well, we were just kind of in the middle of a normal process. We'd kind of heard some weather reports, some weather could be coming in, and the conditions were lining up that it could be bad situation. You know, we were just going about our business days leading up to this rain event.
Like Eric said, we were preparing for the incoming rain forecast, and all we could do is wait. But the winter was bad enough, the ice was very thick, so breakup was a little later than normal, and everything was still frozen.
Yeah, we knew with the snow cover, with the frost, and with the amount of rain, that the potential would be there for some high water.
Can you tell us a little bit about what was happening in our own NRD office?
when it started raining and we started off by going out. I think we went out Thursday and looked around and nothing was really happening yet. But you got to give it time for all the water to get down to the end of the watershed. Come Friday, Dave Moore and I went out to check the levees and people were sandbagging down at Clear Creek on the very north end. They brought sandbags in. They thought it was gonna breach on the tieback levee. We drove the levee, water was coming up, and there were places where it was maybe 6 inches from topping and other places where it was a foot and a half from topping. So we felt the levee wasn't at the right elevation all the way through. So there was concerns there. I think a number of staff were out driving around that day, looking at other areas, taking pictures and video, stuff that started happening.
Thank you for that information, Bob.
We started hearing reports, I think late Thursday, water coming up. The first thing that I noticed and got out to our Highway 77 Lake Wanahoo structure, and we were getting a substantial water through our principal spillway there. Got some video and some photos of that. We started having staff get out into the field and start checking areas. On Friday, then, the Highway 92 bridge on our east border, that road was still open while we were there. They started closing that down. The LaShera Bridge was, I believe, the last bridge open over the Platte River on Friday. And we'd also gone up to Woodcliff area to see there. They were doing some berming along the river road there. Water was up against those berms as well. And just like Highway 77, then, the bridge going into Fremont was closed. By the time we got there late Friday morning, the highway was closed there.
Wow. That's almost unbelievable how fast that happened.
I don't know if that was immediate. I know then there was a lot of get together with other officials in the district as well, emergency managers. I know we went to North Bend and met with them in a kind of emergency meeting to coordinate things. Met with Colfax County as well, further up with some of the problems there we were having along the Platte and Shell Creek, the longest creek that drains to the Platte in our district. Trying to address those problems and come up mainly just observing. And no real solutions at that point, obviously. And other damages along the Platte that were breaking out, causing all sorts of havoc. Just trying to work together as a team.
And I was impressed with the communication, like Tom mentioned, between the emergency managers from each of the counties. There was a substantial amount of communication going on that not only from individuals in our office throughout the area.
That's great to hear that everyone was able to communicate in a timely manner. Let's discuss some of the dams and levees in our district. What happened to them during this event?
You know, we've got levees in the North Bend area on the south side and on the north side. We're beginning to breach. We were hearing reports of damage up there as well.
And then the NRD's responsibilities, Clear Creek levee from just south of Utan all the way to the guard camp. We're a sponsor of that project, so we definitely are involved with that levee. And that levee had two breaches in it, one in the guard camp and one up by County Road E and F. And it overtopped in that area very bad. A lot of severe erosion along the banks. We lost a house at Thomas Lakes where the levee ties into high ground. Yeah, a lot of damage on our levee that we were a sponsor of, but there were numerous other levees. The Platte Valley levee, three breaches. LaShera levee had one breach. The old Morris Bluff levee has a big hole in it yet today. And then numerous other small stuff, as we found out, with the Rod and Gun Club area, McGinn's Lake area, up by Richland and Schuyler. We were a sponsor of 25 years ago where we put in 8 or 9 jetties and that was all gone. So yeah, there was a lot of damage. And not that we're responsible for all of that, but particularly the Clear Creek levee and the Corps with RNRD are going to fix that. But we will help assist other entities if they need help or ask.
From the positive standpoint, we found out 45 of our flood retention dams. There was minimal damage on most of those. They held up as designed. And some of those were getting pretty old. Still, with our maintenance, they were in good shape. A levee, big levee project we supported by Schuyler, not directly on the Platte, but the tributary of Shell Creek that leads into that, held up very well. A project with the landowners cost-shared on a levee project just east of that, and that, although that had some damage, it held up overall pretty well. So there were some good things that happened from that, but the Platte was really the big problem with levees and getting out of its banks and causing all sorts of record-setting damage.
Thanks for sharing that, Tom.
Saturday morning, we were getting a lot of reports farther south on the Clear Creek. Damage, roads underwater. So that's when I'd gotten out to go inspect down there. And I can't say enough good things about the communication, like I mentioned before, and the work with the Army National Guard. Within a half an hour of requesting the ability to get into a helicopter to fly to see exactly what the damage was, they had a helicopter landing on County Road E, picking me up and flying the entire 10 and a half miles of our Clear Creek levee. Once we got up, we saw that there was potential overtopping. It was getting very close. We began airlifting sandbags with that military helicopter. We dropped, I think, up as many as 10 large sandbags in that damaged area, and you know, we weren't helping at all. It continued to grow every time we came back. They dropped me back off, had told me they'd pick me up towards dusk that evening on Saturday. They brought another helicopter out, flew most damaged area, and realized it was about 90% breached. And so at that point in time, we contacted the authorities and began the evacuation process of all those lake communities. And so the Ashland emergency team began conducting that Saturday night, the evacuation process, and went through all those communities and evacuated everyone out of there, simply because we knew at some point in time that levee structure of ours was going to fail.
Very interesting, Eric. So fortunate you were able to go up in a helicopter to really help you visualize everything that was going on.
Eric, you were very impressed with how responsive the Corps was.
People may have issues with the Corps of Engineers, but in this situation, the communication throughout that entire weekend, you know, the process since in repair, it has been amazing. The communication during that time with the Corps, with the emergency management team, with the Army National Guard, I was really surprised at how well the communication lines went.
And it was very, you know, it's unfortunate the tragedy had to bring us all together to know each other. But a lot of entities that we worked with, a lot of them, but some of them we weren't real sure of. But like in Dodge County, a joint management, water management group that formed interlocally now, 12 entities, worked together on these issues and moving forward. So we know them better, they know us better, and we've been teaming together for the repairs and prepare for the future.
So we keep hearing warnings that there may be some more flooding this spring. Can you talk more about this?
Well, we are having some lowland flooding along the Platte River. We don't really have the slush ice that has built up and then refroze packed together. It gets hung up on bridges or sandbars and they just can't float through. So it builds up and then it refreezes and it gets solid that way. So it has caused problems up by North Bend and Schuyler. And I think some of that has broke loose, but now the problem is at Fremont, Big Island area, and Englewood on that southwest corner of Fremont area is being flooded currently. But there's a lot of river that is open and flowing. So the news media has said that kind of normal.
Involved with the ICE agreement forever, and that's limited what we can do at times, but we're teamed together with others with blasting. Dynamiting can be used, but that's very limited. You can't do that just everywhere. And we worked with the state with dusting in the past, and that is another tool. But sometimes, you know, and I know through this, Brian Newton had been involved, but Tom Smith also called this last Sunday saying, where do we go from here? And they had contacted the Corps, and they met with them this last Sunday to go out and look at a helicopter dropping a big weight. You know, maybe would that be a possibility? I guess it was determined that wasn't going to work out as well as they thought to help move some of that. It's not like the entities don't want to work together and act quickly, but sometimes you're just limited for safety reasons and other reasons. What do you do with ice?
And some of this lowland flooding may not be occurring now, but there's still damage from last March. And that's why the Rod and Gun Club area, we found out there's still a breach up there that was never patched or tried to patch. So water is going through that. The levee at La Chera, nobody has worked on that. And there was some flooding occurring a couple weeks ago coming through that breach hole. So they're concerned again, when this all releases from Fremont, is it going to come through that hole? So there's a lot of existing holes out there that weren't temporarily patched, and the lowland flooding is going to occur in those areas.
So they're trying to react as quickly as we can on some measures. We work together with the county, Dodge County, and Fremont, and others to patch one of those major breaches temporarily. I think there's an 800-foot break near the Rod and Gun Club where water can pass through toward Fremont. How effective that will be, we'll find out. We got to do something. So the board, our board agreed yesterday to be part of that financial assistance to move forward with those others to patch that big hole in anticipation of more flooding could be coming. Keep the water as much as we can in the river.
Eric, earlier you had mentioned working with the Corps. Can you name some of the other entities that we have been working with?
Throughout the past year, Corps of Engineers, we have been working with the National Guard Camp in Ashland with some of the work that needed to be done down there. Lincoln Water System has property in our district as well that has had a lot of damage that we've been working with them. Trying to work as much as possible with the drainage districts and the dike districts and keeping up with the communities that have had issues that may have needed some directions. The relationships that we've built, like Tom mentioned earlier, you know, over this past year with agencies and communities and the emergency managers has been great. It seems like we're always finding, you know, another damaged area that is privately owned. So we try to work as much as we can to communicate and get information out to some of these private landowners that may have some damage along the river to help guide them to the sources that can assist them to get repairs taken care of.
Part of what we had going before the floods was updating our hazard mitigation plan. The district does that for all the communities and work with other bordering NRDs to get the counties involved. So we had that process going. That's preventative, kind of looking ahead of what things, well, here come the flood. So we were able to respond under that to hold a workshop in Wahoo, invite these entities in to help them go through the process of getting FEMA emergency money for repairs. And that's something we could do immediately. It went very quickly. We had good response with that, trying to guide people going through the protocol of working with these other agencies. So sometimes you just got to do with what you do, and it never seems enough at the moment. Keep looking for opportunities and working with people, and things come together better that way.
I know when it all occurred last year that, I know Eric was out a lot, but when you're sitting at home getting feedback via text messages and phone messages and emails, you really feel helpless. You just can't do anything about Mother Nature.
We had an old director once say that never getting into argument with the river because the river always wins. You can gently persuade. You can, so projects that we like to do, we feel maybe we're gently persuading the river to move in the direction we'd like it to, but in the end, the river will always win.
All right, well, thank you all for being here today and explaining and recapping the events that happened last March.
Hi, I'm Mackenzie Berry, Lower Platte South NRD Environmental Education and Communications Coordinator. Today with me are Paul Zillick, NRD General Manager, and Al Langdale, Operation Maintenance Coordinator. Thanks for sitting down with me today as we discuss and remember the March 2019 flood from a year ago.
Thanks for having us, Mackenzie.
Hey, we're glad to be here.
Paul, let's talk a little bit about why this was such a unique event. You've been here 35 plus years at the NRD. This is the first time where something like this has ever unfolded so quickly. So talk to us a little bit more about that.
Well, sure, Mackenzie. Yeah, every storm's a little different, but this one was quite a bit different because there was nothing out of the normal through the first part as we were dealing just with ice, because we have ice every year on the Platte and the Elkhorn, and it works its way through the system. So everything was in familiar territory at that point. But we don't have many bomb cyclones hit in the middle of March where parts of the state up to 3 inches of rain. That is very rare, not anything that we've seen around here. Plus, with all the snow and ice that was already on the ground, it was way more than 2 or 3 inches of rain. So a lot of different situations and events all kind of lining up and happening at the wrong time that created the flooding that we had in March 2019.
Many of us have memories of the March 2019 floods. Can you recall for me what was going on when you realized what was beginning to unfold with current weather and river conditions?
Sure, Mackenzie. Yeah, 2019 was quite a year. It started as kind of our typical kind of year, early in the winter. You know, we're monitoring the ice on the Platte River because, you know, flooding's not something that happens during the winter much, but ice jams are a big concern. So we were doing our usual monitoring, the Platte River ice situation, along with a couple other neighboring NRDs and counties. That was going on. winter was progressing and things were starting to melt and ice was starting to break up, main concern was watching the ice jams and making sure we didn't have problems with the ice on the Platte.
You mentioned to me that was kind of the week before.
Right.
National Weather Service had said to you, Paul, hey, we're keeping an eye on this. We're watching weather conditions. You knew potentially that there might be some ice jams based on what was happening. All of a sudden, the next week we start to have the bomb cyclone event start to unfold with some heavy rain around the river.
Right. Papio Missouri River NRD is the lead on the ice, and then the National Weather Service alerted us that it looked like a rain event was going to also happen in this region. We started thinking about that, but the main focus early on was obviously dealing with the ice situation.
So we essentially went from being in kind of winter mode, thinking about ice and ice jams, to all of a sudden having all this rain and jumping into spring flooding.
That's correct. We're not used to seeing that type of flood event, especially on the Platte and the Missouri, where most of the flooding occurred. Obviously, you can tell that by the damage it caused and all the events that happened. Before the rain, there again, we were all focused on ice. The ice was moving before the rain. Then with the rain, it pretty much flushed all the ice out. There wasn't even ice around. And we knew that there was enough ice that, you know, we might have to use some explosives. We were getting ready to do that. My recollection is we had the wind was coming up about the time we were thinking we might have to blow up some ice jams. But then the water came right along with it and moved the ice out.
The helicopter bunch was activated. They were preparing to leave, but then everything else occurred, and then the wind, and they knew they couldn't fly in that, so they kind of got scrubbed because it was beyond that point at that stage.
And so fast forward to the next week, National Weather Service has told us we're going to have this rain event. The rain starts. For us, that was Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday evening when we began to monitor stream gauges. Can you talk to us a little bit about the stream gauges that we have and what was going on?
Yeah, on Tuesday afternoon, March 12th, is when we started watching the USGS gauges. They're on Salt Creek and some other tributaries in Lincoln, and watch and see what they were doing. They were starting to gradually come up slowly with the snow melt and with the rainfall we had. Snow was our biggest downfall in this whole deal. We had the rain, which Salt Creek can handle a lot of rain, soaking the tributaries, but the snow melt added that much more onto us, that determining factor that we couldn't figure down to the T on how things were going to go. We started monitoring gauges like we always do. After supper time, started monitoring gauges into the evening. Paul and I stayed in contact throughout the night. The next morning, once again, started out on Salt Creek. Salt Creek was very, very soft due to the frost coming out of the ground, the levee system itself. So we tried to stay off the levees as much as we could, but we needed to watch to make sure flap gates were operating, closing as they needed to be. And so there had to be some trips up and down the levee system that we needed to make. But once the flap gates were all closed, we knew they were not seeping by or leaking the wrong direction onto the land side. Then we pretty much stayed off the entire levee system. Did our monitoring from gauges and also from bridges and overpasses and areas we could watch the creek channels.
So watching the weather, how much rain all the areas are getting, checking Salt Creek levee, looking at the gauges electronically, checking those levels there. At some point, we're patrolling the levee here, we're keeping an eye on things, and then you decide to go up and check on some projects that we have that are up along the river.
Right. After we got Salt Creek looked at to make sure everything was functioning properly, Paul and I got together and met, and Paul decided probably be a good idea if I headed down to Camp Ashland to see what's actually going on down in that area. So Bryce Jensen, our operation maintenance technician, and I went down there and just how Salt Creek was entering into the Platte River to see what kind of conditions they had.
And that was Wednesday morning?
That was Wednesday, yeah, late morning on Wednesday, yes.
And you had described to me, Al, you went up to check on it, you get up there, water's covering the road. A lot of corn stalk debris. Can't drive any further. You could go as far as you could go. Water's rising, so you've stopped to check everything out. As you described it to me, you also told me that there was a stop sign, but the water was so high, all you could see was the top of the stop sign.
As you turn into Camp Ashland, you go over the railroad tracks, and then there's a road there that leads back. That road was completely underwater. We couldn't get any further than just over the railroad track. So at that point, we took as many pictures and didn't observe. It was flowing on the tubes underneath the road that heads to the Platte River, and just seeing what we could see and report back to Paul. And we were able to report to Lower Platte North because they were kind of locked in with all the high water they had around them. So we kind of reported to them what we were seeing at that point also to give them updates. When we were on the Highway 6 bridge, it was just enormous amount of noise just from the water hitting the bridges and just the water flowing, and it did have ice. Yeah, we had the water underneath, then we had the ice, and then we had water on top. So there was actually three layers there. So there was some water or ice starting to break up underneath from thawing from the water on top. So it was just the noise was unbelievable how loud it really was. It was just a big roar is what it sounded like.
Paul, I know we had rain here in March, but there wasn't a lot of flooding in the city of Lincoln.
In March, the rain event was moving through, and we were kind of watching that. We were surprised. We had, you know, maybe an inch of rain. We did have a little more rain just northwest of Lincoln, which is upstream of Lincoln. Rainfall amounts weren't that high compared to what it typically takes to flood. We did notice up around Branched Oak and in the northwest of town, there was even more rain. And as we were monitoring the dams that we have in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers dams, which is like Branched Oak, we noticed that they were holding back quite a bit of water. Stream gauges here in Lincoln reached flood stage, but without those dams, the water would have been much higher. So they did quite a bit of good and benefit for the city of Lincoln.
We're really boots on the ground. We're really out watching, keeping track, monitoring, and communicating. Paul, can you let us know who we're communicating with and who takes the lead to alert the public if need be?
Well, the National Weather Service is the earliest leader in that group as they keep a good handle on what's going on, how wet the ground is, soil moisture, if we get storm events, the potential for flooding. And then as events, as storms move in this direction, they have a pretty good idea how much precipitation is there and whether there's going to be a chance of flooding or not. So they are definitely a lead, and they kind of alert everybody to what's going on. Then the counties, through their emergency management departments, the leaders on trying to continue to inform the public and get the public out of harm's way if we have those kind of events coming in. There's a group of different entities that all have roles in that, but obviously the Weather Service and county emergency management agencies are right up there as far as having a very, very important role.
We keep hearing warnings that there may be more flooding this spring.
Yeah, I mean, the Corps of Engineers has been having teleconference going on all winter with the ice jams. Now they're kind of focusing toward the spring weather forecast. And the prediction is due to snowpack in South Dakota, now it's getting to be in Montana, that the Platte River, especially in Missouri, could see higher levels again this spring. They're anticipating rainfall to be higher than normal. Like I say, at this point, they're just forecasts, so we don't know exactly what's going to happen. But from the NRD standpoint, if a flood event happens, the NRD is prepared 24/7, 365 days a year for any event that could happen or may happen, and so we can help protect the city of Lincoln and other areas throughout the district.
Paul, what would you like to share about potential spring flooding?
At Lower Platte South, we've done a number of projects between flood control structures and levees. We've had engineers design all those projects, and they're designed to handle certain amounts of rain, and they've continued to provide benefits over the years of reduced flood damages. They'll do that. They'll continue to do that as long as we operate and maintain those projects. They'll continue to provide those kind of benefits. There's always the potential of getting storms that are beyond larger than what this project was designed to. And for that reason, you've got emergency spillways on dams and those type of things. So, you know, we can always expect some of that will happen on those extreme events. In parts of Nebraska, 2019 was a good example of that.
Al and Paul, thank you so much for your time today. Very interesting conversation, recalling the floods of March 2019, especially as we hit this one-year anniversary mark.
Thanks, Mackenzie.
Thanks, Mackenzie.
Jennifer Stowe-Story, Public Relations Education Programs Manager here at the Papio NRD. Today I'm here with John Winkler, General Manager of the Papio NRD, and we are going to talk about the flood of 2019. So last March, we knew conditions were ripe for flooding, but Mother Nature created that perfect storm, if you will. Tell us about that. What were the factors that came into play that resulted in that historic flooding?
So if you had to draw it up of how to cause a flood, last year had been the perfect example. So there was frozen ground, there was a high amount of precipitation as far as snowpack, rain, And then also there was quite a bit of ice on the area rivers. We had a very cold February and it made the ice thicker. Then when the bomb cyclone event occurred, and then we started to get a massive amount of precipitation, then that just led to the perfect conditions to line up exactly as they needed at the right time to cause that event.
Tell me the moment that you felt, okay, Mother Nature may just have the upper hand here and really does mean business.
Right. I think that would probably be, the Tuesday or Wednesday of that week of the flood. When the ice jam occurred, we had the explosives contractor on hand. That evening before we were going to actually deploy the explosives, the ice jam moved out on its own. And so we thought, hey, good thing. We kept getting reports of water, river levels rising. And I spent quite a bit of time with my peer NRDs from up north in the Elkhorn and the Loop. And they kept saying, there's just a lot of water coming down your way. Same with the Corps from the Missouri River dams. And so once I kept getting those reports, we kept seeing the river levels rise. Regardless of the ice was gone, we knew there was going to be problems. Now, no one anticipated the significance of this. And it happened so fast, there was no way to prepare.
Flooding officially started in various places. So how did the Papio NRD divide and conquer? How did we prioritize the crises when there were so many happening at one time?
Right. So that was the biggest challenge, was where do we put our limited number of people at? Obviously, we focused along the Elkhorn, the Platte, and the Missouri Rivers. So it got to the point, though, where it was happening so quickly that we had to start bringing people kind of into the interior of the Omaha area, into the heart of the city. And the reason is we couldn't afford to get people trapped either on levees or where we couldn't get them back. That was a challenge. In fact, we had people driving down the levee when there was water rising behind them on their way to try to get out of there. I mean, that's how fast it was occurring. We're trying to keep our people out of harm's way, but then also to do what we're supposed to do and help the public get out of harm's way too. I didn't want to have our people caught where they had to turn into a rescuee instead of a rescuer.
When we had to decide the pros and cons of whether to breach the levee, and maybe you can talk about that for just a minute, at Offutt Air Force Base, obviously that was a huge decision. How did we come to a decision?
So we looked at how do we get the water off of the base as quickly as we can, open up the runway, and get those airplanes back. The Corps had 41 major breaches along the Missouri River. Only four levee systems did not breach, and that was the one that we had that protect off it. It overtopped it, but it didn't breach. I called the colonel from the Corps of Engineers and said, hey, I just want to let you know we're going to tear a hole in one of your levees that didn't breach. And of course they were nervous about that and basically said, you're going to do what? I said, we need to get this water out of the base. And he goes, well, we can't prevent you from doing it. You know, obviously he indicated you're only one of the levees that isn't ruined. And he goes, you have to make sure that if you do it, that you can repair it. In case there's more high water, you can't have a weak spot that's just going to flood the base again. I tasked the engineers, our staff, and also our contractors. They spent about 8 hours here at the office. We even took a picture and saved the work that they did. But they painstakingly went through every scenario that if we did breach the levee and drained the area or the base, could we fix it? Could we fix the breach and get it back to a level of protection? The issue was there was not enough appropriate material to fix it. And so they called me, I think it was 12 or 12:30 at night, and they recommended that we did not breach it. And it's probably the best decision we made.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, you know, when you did get up in that helicopter to survey the damage, like you said, you couldn't even see them. And you've seen a lot of flooding. Mm-hmm. Did you think your eyes were playing tricks on you, or what were your...
It's just surreal because you never expect to see that. And no one's seen that. No one, at least alive today, has seen that. And so everything looked like a big lake. In areas that you see as underwater that normally you don't. And just to see that, you know, obviously the devastation of communities and people's livelihoods. And if they're ag producers or if they have houses along the river, that's the bad part. And the flooding isn't even really the worst part. It's that after. It's the cleanup. It's what do we do? Do we move? Do we rebuild? And so those are the things that are the worst. So that part of it was bad, but you don't understand. You know, you see maps of what it would look like if you had that event. And there are little blue lines on the map, and this area would be underwater. But until you see something like that underwater, you can't ever really grasp it until you see it. I mean, it was completely devastating. And it could have been a lot worse, though. Like we said, Omaha, pretty much the entire area that wasn't along the major river was spared. There was zero damage. And if you weren't paying attention to the news, looked out your door, and you thought everything was perfectly fine. And that's a testament to some of the stuff that we've done and the Corps has done in the past with the reservoirs and levees that we have. It saved the day for the city. No question about it.
Well, our district has experienced 2 500-year flood events in the last decade. Mm-hmm. We have anticipated increases in weather extremes. Add to that increased urbanization and the need for flood mitigation structures within our district are more important than ever.
What we are seeing and have seen over the last decades, we're having more high-intensity type of rain events. And so we're seeing more water in the system in eastern Nebraska, and that's just what's going on. You know, we're anticipating that. We're trying to react to that. We've got 9 projects still on the drawing board as far as reservoirs and levees and things like that to complete. And we're rehabbing the levee that protects Offutt and the Omaha's treatment plant to make it stouter and taller and hopefully mitigate that 500-year type of event that occurred.
You know, right now, all signs are pointing to more flooding spring, too.
Right. Well, and it just seems like all the forecasts that we've seen, long-range projections is this just part of the country, this part of the state, is just going to see an elevated rainfall total year after year after year. But we're just in that pattern, right? Now, I'm sure with the flip side of that is we may experience drought for a couple years or a year, and so we're preparing for that as well. The best thing you can do is in a flood, prepare for a drought, and drought, prepare for a flood. That's what we're doing.
Come on, Mother Nature, be on our side.
We need a break.
Right. Well, thanks, John,
no, thank you
for your time
it.
And insight.